I file into the pews in the church here and just, you know, chat a little bit. So I'll turn it right back over to Lynn for the morning introductory music. Thanks, Lynn. Oh, and by the way, today, yes, our reader will be Dolores Mavens, and she's going to be reading from Listening Attention, and as usual, our music maestro is Lynn Johnson. Also, the admin is Barb. So I will let go of the mic, turning it back over to you, Lynn, for our morning music.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Oh, thanks, Regina. I almost said Regina. Thanks, Lynn. I appreciate that. I was love that opening song. I really get into it when I hear it. So the statement of purpose for awakening together is we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And you know, this is something that's always been dear to my heart about studying all the different scriptures that I've studied, is because I love truth and I want to see it in all forms. I just never could believe that only one path was right and everybody else was wrong. I just never went for that. And so that's what I love about awakening together, is that we really embrace truth in all forms and we realize that it's one truth. It could be expressed differently, but this is what really unites us and makes us see that commonality and connection with all of us, no matter where we're from. And I just absolutely love that. It's very dear to my heart. Today I'd like to speak about the core value number 5. We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. And again, in keeping with our purpose, Regina received these core values. There's five of them. This is the last of the five. And and it says all appearances and all experiences. So that means when, you know, things don't go as according to plan, or something happens that, you know, brings up an upset in some kind of way, we still honor that as having value for us, because oftentimes those situations do have value. Those have sometimes the greatest value. They're the greatest gifts. And we can just come back to the truth, which is never changing, right? And never disappointing. We're going to switch to announcements in the program now, and I didn't receive those from Regina because she's at the conference, being part of the conference, giving a talk there, and I figured she wouldn't be able to do that. And by the way, Regina, I did give Danielle the info directly for the Facebook post in case you might not have gotten to it. If anyone would like to take the mic and give announcements of anything that's coming up, you know, Regina, Jackie, I'll turn the mic over to you.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I my head is not in the place where I'm coming up with announcements and such. And so last night I hurriedly sent Jay an email saying, you know what, I have no special announcements. But this morning I was looking at the schedule, and so I do have some announcements. next week, next Sunday night, not tonight, there are two things that you might want to be aware of. One is that starting at 7:30 Eastern Time, from 7:30 until 9 Eastern Time, that will be our monthly satsang, and our guest this month will be John Sherman. And I don't know if you know John Sherman, but he is someone who was in prison, and while in prison, he became a student of Gangaji, and in fact, a student of Gangaji who I think had a crush on Gangaji. But you know what? It was a crush on my algebra teacher that got me through algebra. And so it was a crush on Gangaji that got him looking towards the truth. And then eventually, of course, Gangaji let him know that, you know, what he wanted from her is not what he was going to get. And Gangaji fell off her pedestal, but then he dove into meditation and awoke in prison. And so he will be our guest next Sunday night. I believe the date is April 17th. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but it's a week from today. And, again, that will be starting at 7:30 and going until 9. And then starting at 9 p.m., we'll have a new mini-series starting. It will be a three-week mini-series with our friend Bruce Rawls, who is here at the conference. He's all lit up. He's just as happy and giggly as possible. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to share with us. Starting next week. That will be a three-week mini-series starting next Sunday at 9 p.m. right after the John Sherman satsang. So those are the announcements, and it's nice talking to you all, and I'm going to release the mic and turn it back over to Jay.
Yeah, thanks, Regina. That's an interesting story. I'm sure I'll have to tell Joe Wolf he's speaking. I'm sure he'll be interested in hearing his perspective. Thank you. So let's take a moment and close our eyes. And we're going to move into the invocation prayer. Just taking a deep breath. I give my acknowledgement, dear God, that you are the presence in which I live, and every part of myself is within God. I know that my heart will be released in spirit through grace, unless I want to block love and thus imprison myself. In the name of my freedom, I choose your release in my heart, and in the sight of all, because I recognize that we will only be released together, united as one. In this spirit, I choose to see me being within you, and all within you too. I thus see no separation between God and me, and in whom all I see. In this I know I am healed. Amen. Okay, we'd like to turn over to Lynn in her room there in Las Vegas with Dolores present, ready to read from the segment I sent her in a PDF out of the book by Bob Ferguson that Regina mentioned recently called Listening Attention. And I also put a Facebook post up saying that I had read the book and done some good contemplations with it and really enjoyed it. I think it would be a good book for anyone on the path of truth for sure. So turning it over to you, Lynn and Dolores.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Because I really have a real mic here. I'm usually talking on my phone, and I feel like Larry King. But I have the auspicious opportunity, the lovely opportunity to be with my Awakening Together family here in Las Vegas. I had dinner with Regina last night. I'm in the room with Lynn and Dove and it's just and Sonja, and it's just been an awesome opportunity to get closer to them. I'm not just online. And also, Jay, just thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to read this morning's I am honored and grateful. So here's the reading. What do you love? If a thing loves, it is infinite. William Blake. Progress on the path can be thought of in terms of value or love. What is most important to us is what we value the most, what we really love. The path of self-discovery can be seen in these terms. We observe ourselves and discover what our true motivations are, leading us to see what we value. Another way to see this is by checking our fact status. What we actually do every day tells us much about what we value and perhaps shows us the gap between our personal storyline and our actions. If this fact-checking and self-observation are carried far enough, we may begin to get a look at something called our self or personality and begin to see its elusive nature. We may be forced to admit to its exalted status as our real true love, despite our ego's protestations to the contrary. Using this shock as further fuel for the search, we become a bit more honest in our future assessments. If self-inquiry is carried even further through this process of elimination, we may find something more real to love than this self. Back beyond our mind's motion, something still and silent lies. If you find a love of truth rather than fiction, it may take you there. Finding this still point depends largely on our state of satisfaction with our beloved self. If the state becomes one of dissatisfaction, Lynn. If the state becomes one of dissatisfaction, we have the. She has a change of page for me. I don't want to touch anything because I don't want anything to go down. We have the incentive to look for something more stable. Hearing from others that have gone before that there is something somewhere within and that it is worth any effort to find it also adds to our incentive. By looking at what we love, we can come to love the truth and find there is something worthwhile inside us other than mind motion and change. Let's take a look at how this path might turn out and some of the pitfalls and signposts along the way from love of self to love itself, all in capitalized. We hear of this so-called still point called by such names as silence, stillness, the center, the source, what we really are, etc., and wonder. If our intuition is not clouded by the dissipations of relentless pleasure-seeking and the resultant fear, we may discover a longing, a nostalgia deep within that tells us we may have once known this silence and still love it more than we might know. This longing is fed, too, perhaps by being tired of the jostling effects of life, its traumas, an endless no-win scenario, leading only to death and dissolution. So, we read the books and search the internet, finding many who tell of the way back to this stillness. They vary from intellectual work of Hubert Benoit to the practical experiments of Douglas Hardy. We find the path back to this center, also called by many names, the inner movement, self-remembering, a double-pointed arrow of attention, one directed in, one out, observing the observer, looking back at what we are looking out of. Many speak of silence, and even the many forms of silence. From this information alone, we may not come any closer to really knowing this still point. But if we persist in looking, we may get lucky and discover much that it is not. We begin to see that it cannot be something of the mind, for we find the mind is motion. We may be fooled into thinking that the stillness is something we can manufacture, that it's found only in ashrams or monasteries, or that we can force it onto the relative world through controlling the environment. Or we may decide to create it within by controlling our mind, forcing it to think only what we have been told we should think, and discover that this, too, is folly. When the still point is finally reached, even if only for a moment, it is unmistakable. If we have allowed ourselves to hone our intuition and clear our thinking, we will find that this silent place within is not just a concept, but very real. The movement necessary to turn our attention back away from the outer and inner movies of the mind and senses is found to be also something real and not a thought or concept at all. We find, too, that we forget and are carried back into the mind at every instant. But if our love for the silence is true, it will turn us back into it again and again, provided our previous experience with the mind and its motion has been enough or too much. This is where what we value or really love comes in. If our meaning is taken from the changing scene of the relative world, we will keep our attention directed towards it. We will turn away from the silence within, and our longing will be for the excitement and changes of the mind. We may declare our love for the center, but our attention will long for the agony and ecstasy of the world of form. Boredom with silence, too, means our value has not yet moved inward from the world to truth, but remains trapped by the colorful kaleidoscope of the mind and the energy releases of the body. This part of the journey is a journey within. We retreat from our former love for motion and change and move inwards towards simplicity and truth. After the still point has been found and correctly valued, our attention is then turned round and we begin a new phase, one of our new love being tested. While we continue to hold a part of our gaze on the still point, it being what we really are, we also turn around and engage in the world of action. This is to test our love, to see if the trials and tribulations of the outer world can knock us off course and change our point of reference. If we come back to the center time and again, during and despite every trial, we find we are becoming less of the world and more of the silence. In any situation in life, no matter how difficult or how often we forget, if we eventually return to the still point as our anchor, we find we are becoming one with it. We become that which we love. You know, thank you, Jay, for giving me this reading. You know, I went zip lining on Friday night here in Vegas, so I guess I'm really not at that still point. Thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
That's fine. I hope you had fun zip lining, Dolores. That was a beautiful reading. Thank you. That was wonderful. Yeah, thank you, Lynn, for being there, because I sent Dolores a PDF, and I was a little concerned about the technical aspect of getting to the other pages and stuff, so thanks for helping out. You know, there was a lot of points in what Bob Ferguson wrote in that section that I think all of us really can be helpful for us to hear and remind ourselves of. Because this sort of fact-checking that we need to do on the spiritual path is so important. Because the ego mind, the body, the ego, the false mind, will be there until it's not there anymore, right? And to the false mind, to the false self, to the ego thinking mind, it doesn't know what God is, right? There's no awareness of anything but what Bob Ferguson calls, I think he calls it his little friend, or what in the Untethered Soul Michael Singer calls the roommate. The way to clarity is through the observation. You know, Carlos Castaneda referred to it as stalking. Not stalking in a creepy way, but like if you're stalking someone, say you're a private detective and you're stalking, you're getting paid to follow this guy and take notes on what he's doing. And you're walking behind him, keeping your distance, just observing, not judging, writing down what you see and just observing without judgment. That's what the idea behind what Carlos Castaneda was teaching is all about, doing that with ourselves. And of course, this is the self-inquiry, very similar to the self-inquiry practice that Ramana Maharshi talks of. You know, in a recent teaching, Elie Wiesdahl mentioned to us in the satsang that, you know, to ask ourselves the question, you know, are we looking for an experience? Are we looking for truth for the sake of truth? You know, ask us, it's not just that we need to ask ourselves that question once. If we want truth for the sake of truth, we're increasingly, very naturally, less concerned with the specifics of how a situation turns out, right? You know, we can look at each day as like a gold coin that we're given, that we can spend somewhere. What are we going to spend our gold coin on? To me, the practice of the inner practice is almost like I'm saving the gold coin. The gold coin is becoming part of me. I'm spending it, so to speak, on what really matters, what is eternal. Because the personality is temporary, right? How we, not just that the body does die, but our feelings about things change too. You know, the things we think make us happy change. You know, asking the question, what is it that will make me happy? Well, who's the I asking that question, right? You know, there's that distance between who you are now and where you're going to be, and all of that. The question itself takes you out of the present, right? All about letting go of the agenda, right? These preferred situations and circumstances, these agendas, the, you know, if we live our life just drawn to where we're drawn to, even if it doesn't make logical sense to the ego mind. Sometimes we're drawn through intuition to do things by a still small voice that we, of course, have resistance to. But sometimes we have willingness. And it's, of course, the more willingness we practice, the more willingness we have. Because just as we're talking about, whatever it is that I spend my time on, the decisions I make become what I value. If I make the decision to go with where the inner voice is leading me, I have just said, hey, I value the inner voice, right? if I hear that inner voice and I choose to do something else, then I value the temporary. I want an experience. I want an experience, and there's nothing wrong with that. Have the experience. Have a ball. Right? But if you want truth, and that inner voice will always be inviting you to partake of truth for the sake of truth. You know, the times that I listen to the inner voice, I'm never disappointed, ever. Like, the things I thought I wanted end up being given to me sometimes in spades. Or they end up being given to me in an amount that's just what I need and nothing more. And nothing more. Because, you know, of the physical material things, we really only need to receive what we need. We don't need more than that. We don't need the abundance of luxury and excess just for the sake of physical safety and security. We can just go with where we're guided, like the Peace Pilgrim, how she just sort of went and she was ready to drop the body if she needed to, and she was guided to this cardboard box under this bridge, and she ended up, you know, living, but she didn't care. She was willing to let it all go for the sake of truth. Now, not all of you may be guided to live that way. She was, in her own way. That was her path. But, you know, because these situations and circumstances and, of course, all the people necessary to act a certain way so I can be happy and all of that, you know, these experiences that we want, that we're going to chase after, the ego will always, of course, come just short of giving us everything that would make us totally satisfied, because the ego, of course, could never be completely satisfied. So we will, if we value this sort of situational, experiential happiness, we'll always be chasing it. It's never going to be enough. You know, it's the old adage of the fish that granted the man on the dock the wishes, and he wanted the stars, and that wasn't enough, that he wanted the moon. You know, and he ended up right back where he started, realizing he had everything he needed in the beginning. You know, and if we already find ourselves in that space of being happy and satisfied, you know, that's a great place too, to just launch right into that space, you know, that inner space that we have, where we can seek that God that's within, not the God of the experience, lowercase g. You know, everything's shifting, of course, in our world. You know, it's suddenly sunny, then it's suddenly gray. Suddenly we have work, suddenly work dries up. You know, all these are factors we can't control. So as the teachings guide us, don't try to control your thoughts about the experiences. Just observe them. Gain the clarity and be a master of the observation. You know, you can have just as much fun being disappointed as you can being, having something go your way. You know, oh wow, it didn't go the way I thought it would. You just observe it. Just, it's like a wave on the ocean. Like, I don't think this practice is about trying to be in some, force yourself to be in some state. It's about observation. And the thing about observing yourself being disappointed without judging it is that it takes energy away from the means that you created these expectations in the first place. So the next time something like that comes up, you're less likely to buy into that train and go down that, jump on that train of disappointment, of expectation. You're just going to go with it, not knowing where it's going to go, right? And that way, no matter what happens, you're just in that still point, and it's okay. And you're focused on the inner. When I do that, what I find is that I can actually be of service to the people around me when I'm in those spaces. When I'm truly practicing and being observant and being present, something doesn't go right, whatever, the situation, you know, or whatever, and people, I can be a present and listen to people, right? I can be of service because I'm clear. I'm not in a state of being upset. I'm perfectly okay. And I can listen. I can be attentive. You know, it's a great way to, it brings healing, actually. It really does. There was a lady at work just the other day who was very upset because she lost some money because the system crashed, and I was trying to fix the system for her. And she came downstairs, and I was listening to her, and she was very upset, and she was not yelling, but close to it, and she was apologizing, mixing in with yelling, and we got her, it's a freight business, so there's people, you know, moving trucks with loads, and there's a lot of stress and pressure. These people have a lot, you know, quick things they need to do. And so I was correcting the situation for her, and gradually, as she was working with me and I was working with her, she calmed down. Because in my mind, it was perfectly okay that she was upset. Perfectly okay. Now, had I have not done the practices that I have, I would have been right there with her, getting upset, trying to blame someone, whatever. I didn't do any blame. I didn't do any upset. I just simply listened to her. I said, I'm sure, yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that definitely, I can see why you're upset. Like, the more I listened to her and reflected that I heard what she said and was with her, it's like she seemed to calm down on her own. And it was perfectly okay with me that she was upset. And if she wanted to stay upset the whole time, that was perfectly okay too. But what I noticed was there was a calming effect, a returning to the center. Not because I was trying to do anything, just merely because I was connecting with her and not judging. So what's neat about the still point that Bob Ferguson's talking about is that it will just simply happen, right, through the allowance and non-judgment. This allowance and observation and non-judgment takes all power away from the energy of any reaction. It just, like, takes a plug out of a tub, and then the water just starts draining down. And the longer you stay present, it's like all the time it takes for that water to drain out of the tub is the time you're being present, and it's just gone, and then people feel great, and they don't know why. That's because the person who's being still is seeing truth. They're staying centered in truth and not attached to outcome. I was still involved in producing an outcome, which I did, but I wasn't attached to that either. I was doing what I knew to do, and that's all I can do anyway, is do what I know to do. And yes, the problem got solved, and everything was fine in form. But the most important part of it is that the experience, right? Where are you? What are you practicing? Are you going on the train of the experience, or are you just resting in that still place? And you may even feel some emotions, like I was feeling in the body some emotions she was feeling, because it was kind of transferring through me. But I wasn't resisting it. I wasn't trying to push it away from me and judge it as bad. Now, it didn't stick inside of me. It just moved through like a train. Just passed through me, right? Because I didn't have I didn't judge it. There was no stickiness, no Velcro. Nothing stuck in me. And so it just drained out. Staying centered in the truth. So this is the point of integrity check. This is where we have to take an assessment of what our actual experiences are and how are we being in those experiences and what it is we want. Because the more we observe ourselves, the more we can see what our hidden intentions are. Like, had I have gotten upset, like really upset, I could have, and this still happens with me some. I'm not completely at that full place of never having that happen. It happens seldom, but it still does happen here and there. But then that lets you know you had, you know, those hidden intentions. You wanted a specific outcome. You wanted to try to create a certain effect. And when you realize that that was where you were at, what's a really great practice to do at that point is the root cause analysis practice, which tends to always kind of bring you back to the same place. But it's good to go through the path of how your expectations and beliefs brought you to where you were and be aware of them. So again, so they can be undone. You know, of course, this comes up a lot with family, our close friends, people we work with in different ways. You know, if we just stay centered in that thought that each day is like a precious jewel, each day is a gold coin we've been giving. I've just been sitting with that for a couple of weeks now, viewing every single day as this gold coin and having this sense of great care and sacredness with everything in my day. To practice, and it's been very inspirational for me. I've really, really appreciated that practice, and I don't know how long that will be with me. I guess until I live And I never leave the idea that every day is this precious jewel that I must give my all to. And, you know, the only moment is now. And training my mind to be in that space is the process of this observation. And it's the practice of the stalking of the awareness, gentle, loving place of awareness. And this brings up everything that's unconscious, the iceberg underneath the ocean, right? To be burnt off by the sun. When the iceberg comes up to the ocean, to the surface, the sun melts it, right? It doesn't need to do anything but just come up to the surface because the sun melts it automatically. Our limitations dissipate in the light of our awareness. We don't need to forcibly change our thinking in any way. It will dissipate just through the simple act of awareness. Isn't that good news? We don't actually need to work at it. We just need to be aware of it and not judge it. That's the key. Get out of the way. Notice my thinking. Be observant. You know, this is the watcher. This gives the power to the divine to come through me, right? You know, we're no longer lost in this preconditioned cycle of experiences and responses, which just has no end. You know, Regina teaches a lot about this cycle, right? These are unconscious patterns we have, right? Purification is necessary first. Purification is necessary first. So bring these unconscious patterns up to the sunlight like an iceberg coming up to be shone on by the sun, and the sun rains down upon the iceberg and it melts and it warms the oceans and it's completely healed and there's no more ice and it's a flowing water. It's a stillness, it's a beauty, it's an expression of the divine coming through us to be with whatever is, whatever experience. And this is useful particularly in upsets when those around us are upset. We're not talking about everything being fine. The greatest gifts in life are when the upsets happen. And that's great that if there's stillness, let's celebrate, let's have a party. But as the story and teachings of the life of Buddha have taught us and how his parents tried to insulate him from all wrongdoing and ill of the world, you can't. You can't insulate yourself from that. It's a very much a part of life. And it's perfectly okay to be open to whatever happens or whatever comes your way. And this is the true path of one who wants to love truth and not seek an experience. You know, the observer doesn't set the agenda. The observer just practices, right? I had a goal for a long time. I wanted to make at least one person laugh a day. And I did that for a long time. Because I'm pretty funny. I make people laugh. I have a good comedy mind. I say little funny, silly things come to me to say, so I say them, and I oftentimes make people laugh. But I realized that, you know, that too was like trying to create an effect, have an experience. You know, and it's not that that's bad. I'm not saying anything's bad or good. It's the wanting an experience, you know, is asserting the mind. That's the whole point. The desires of the mind. But if we let that go, we let the mind go, right, and just observe, then we bring strength to the awareness, the stillness, the ever-present Om awareness that's behind and in all things. Talk about power. Talk about incredible, irresistible, indestructible power. That is the power, the true being of things. And that doesn't mean you don't enjoy every single thing. Of course you do. But there's this Om behind it, right? This presence, this power, this feeling of incredible centeredness that's behind the seeming upsets that are occurring with you, and you can, or around you, and maybe you may even be feeling some of the emotions, but it's not anything that's really sticking to you. It's just a passing play of mind, as the Hindus call it, Maya, the play of Maya. And as in the Course in Miracles, there's a reference to leaves whirling around in the wind in intricate patterns and shifting movements. It's all just the play of mind. You know, there's a wonderful poem here in a book called How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love, which I just got in from Amazon 2 days ago. That's in the same series of books that you can find that are like The Most Direct and Rapid Means to Eternal Bliss, The Seven Steps to Awakening. There's a few others too. It's on page 37 by W. Norman Cooper. The self knows only itself, its grandeur, its love, its harmony. The greatest force for good is to be found in self-truth knowing. Knowing the truth of yourself can be your life work. Knowing the truth of yourself can be your love work. Knowing the truth of the self can be your all. No longer is knowing the truth an abstract goal to be obtained. You, the self of you, are the goal and the accomplishment. You are the self. When you love, you are love. You are the self. In the silence, you are completely open to the love of divinity. You become the love of divinity, expressed through and as yourself. In the silence, you know the self as your own being. It is of paramount importance to realize that yourself is much more than your material body. It is even much more than your human intellectuality. Yourself is your consciousness, your inspired, eternal, loving consciousness. You exist as consciousness. Because you are consciousness, you exist. Think of yourself as consciousness. You are consciousness as yourself. Think of the tremendous power available to you in that statement. You are conscious of yourself. Yourself is consciousness. Consciousness is yourself. That's beautiful. And this song of truth for the seeker, for the sake of truth. So for all those who seek truth for the sake of truth, this is a beautiful song to sing. You know, and it's true that truth is what will lead us to happiness, not because of what we do or the experiences we have, but because it is what we are. And since it is what we already are, you know, waiting to be revealed by our own willingness, it just waits upon nothing. It waits upon our awareness. That's it. So let's have a closing prayer for just a moment here. Dear God, the God that is within and among all things, let us not seek to spend our time seeking experiences as a result. Let's spend our time that we have been given in the pursuit of truth, regardless of our experience, in which we know all good things exist and shall be shown to us as we are ready. Amen. Okay, turning the mic over to you, Lynn, for our closing song. Thank you.
materialize, hearing your voice calling me on across the universe, singing my Osho songs, and love will lead us on. Everywhere we go, a love will lead us on. My heart tells me so, a love will lead us on and on, a love will lead us on.
Yes, and there was also, I forgot to mention, if anyone would care to donate, there's a link that I think Barb will put up for the donations as well. I think we were supposed to do that during this portion of the service, but you can put that up, Barb. Thanks. So, kind of entering into a part of the service where we're just sort of sharing, you know, what it is that we experienced during the sharing and anything that came up for us, or maybe where we're at with our own observation practice, or how we feel about the observation practice, if it's something we feel that resonates with us or not, that we practice currently, or maybe ways you notice that you are desiring experience over the sake of truth. You know, it's funny, even... it's interesting because you can, like, catch yourself even amidst times where you're caught in an experience. If you notice, even just for an inkling of a second, hey, I'm caught in this experience right now, that is enough. Don't worry about the fact, like Jim is mentioning, the other 9 times you forgot. Just take that moment, you know, and go back. That's beautiful, Jim. That's perfect. It's funny how when I listen to a lot of Zen teachings, it's always a Zen teacher cracking one of their disciples with a cane at some point. Kind of hardcore teachers. When Karen was reading all those Zen teachers, I think every single time she read, there was some sort of getting smacked by a cane on the part of the disciple from the disciple. Okay, Gloria, I'll turn the mic over to you. Sorry, Gloria. That was a friendly red dot that Lynn put you on there because we couldn't hear you. Unfortunately, there was no sound. And it's no surprise Jim is actually, you know, really okay with the cane experience. Maybe you come from a Zen background, Jim. I don't know. Okay, turning it over to you, Gloria. You know, Gloria, I feel your intention. I do. I feel you. I feel your sharing. I hope you're not frustrated right now. What a great place to practice observing right now. This is perfect. You know, things don't go your way. You know, you wanna take the mic. Technology gets in the way. You can't do it. You feel frustrated. This is such a perfect illustration of what I was talking about this morning. I mean, you know, it's funny how the ego will get us in these simple things, right? Yeah, good suggestion, Barb. Just type what you want to say, and I'll share it if you want. That's okay. There's always a way. You know, it's the little things. You know, opening a door, and the door jams. That we get frustrated, or you know, the things that have worked. You know, 1,000 times in the past, that on the 1,000th and first time it doesn't, you know, the mind has formed this huge expectation that of course it's going to work, and those are the times that we get pissed off, because we're all caught into this expectation, and it's unconscious, creeps in there. The truth is we should all know this by now, we can't really count on Pal Talk working consistently. For those on the radio, Gloria is sharing, wanted to share, also important to stay open when all is well, too. Yes, definitely. When things are going your way, according to the expectations you've set, and you thus deem, I am happy, right, and life is going well, those are great places to just launch into the inner of the observation. Because, however, a lot of people, it's more difficult, actually, for the mind. It tends to do it when there's suffering. On the whole, not to say that it can't happen that way, but that's definitely a minority of folks. Karen, turning it over to you.
Hey, good morning. Can everybody hear me? I changed some of my equipment today, and it's okay, cool. I had an experience this morning which is perfect for the teaching you were giving today. The question about, are you looking for an experience? And I had been meditating on the lesson for the day in A Course in Miracles, and I was sitting in that place of joy and happiness, which the Course lesson tells us, you know, is God's will for us. So I was practicing being in God's will by being in a happy, joyful place. And I practice this often, but I noticed today that there was something a little bit different about being in that space. And when I asked Spirit to help me see what the difference was, I saw that in the past I've been sitting in that space in a very interested, attentive to the present moment. But today I sat in there with more of a completeness, and I was still attentive, but not really as interested in seeing the present moment unfold. I was just pleasantly happy and just being in it instead of anticipating it with a kind of excitement. And so what I saw subtly was that what you were talking about, that I was looking for an experience, and that was in the experience of the unfolding of the now, as if the unfolding of the now was something that was important and something that I should be really interested in. And that's not it at all. And so this, the idea, you know, it was a subtle exertion of my mind saying, there's something to be found here. There's an experience that you're missing. So be alert to it. And that's not the completeness of being completely in the state of happiness. So that was really cool that your teaching kind of pointed that out again for me. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. I couldn't have described it better. That is perfectly, that is exactly what I was teaching this morning, that I felt really drawn to teach. And I didn't emphasize the points you made so much, but it's absolutely true that we can, you know, seek for spiritual experiences just the same as we could any sort of, you know, excitement type experience as well. It doesn't really have a brand name, right? And then you pointed that out. That's perfect. Thank you.
Hi, I guess it's my turn. Is that true? I've been on retreat now for, I think, a week and about 2 or 3 days. The retreat started with a 3-day silent retreat at my home with my friend Norma. And Norma is very focused. Some people might say, some people, not me, but some people might say strict or overly disciplined, right? Very focused and doesn't have time for chit-chat, doesn't have time for spiritual nonsense. And then last Sunday night, we had Ellie Ruzdar here. And Ellie Ruzdar is the same. If you heard her, she's the same. Doesn't really have time for, you know, all that other stuff that isn't exactly focused on awakening. All that stuff that the spiritual seeker might like to pretend like is focused on awakening, but it isn't, right? And then this Wednesday, I spent the entire day with Michael Langford, who is the one who wrote The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, The 7 Steps to Awakening, the book that Jay quoted earlier, which was How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And guess what? He's got that same strictness, no time for anything that is not fully focused on awakening. And so you can imagine being a little over a week into a retreat with these kind of influences, that what's happening for me is that I am, and maybe some people already perceived me as strict, and I'm not using strict in a bad way actually here, in case that word has bad connotations. I'm using strict in a very good way here. Yeah, every day is a golden coin. Why waste it? That's the idea. So some people may have already perceived me as strict, and I think to some degree, maybe, I was. But what's happening is there's a refinement in that is most definitely occurring. And I perceive it's not happening to me alone. I perceive it's not happening to me alone. And those of you who are feeling this refinement, I just want to say that I'm really grateful. I'm reminded of Jesus's comment about the narrow, straight path, right? There's this wide path. And by the way, Jesus was referring to spiritual paths. He was referring to spiritual paths. He saw the wide path at the time as the Jewish religion. That was the wide path that everybody was walking down that was taking them nowhere. And then there was this narrow, straight path. And if you watch Jesus very carefully in the Bible, and if you're listening to the Guiding Light, or if you take the MPP class on Jesus of the New Testament, you'll see that Jesus also was very strict, meaning very focused, no time for idleness. And so that's the narrow, straight path. And I just want to say, those of you who are feeling that refinement along with me, I want to focus us in on that. Because as the days go on and we're a little further away from our Elie Ruzdar experience, a little further away from the Michael Langford experience, which is going to be more fully introduced to you all soon. I don't know when. I'm talking to Lynn about when we can play the audios from my day with him. But soon that will be more introduced more fully to you. But as time goes on and we move further away from this, you know, there's the possibility of meandering off of that narrow path back onto a wider path. And spirituality, our form of spirituality, is just as wide a path as any other. But we can still find that narrow path right here. And so those of you who are feeling that refinement, and you're feeling that maybe there were things you were interested in, things you could get distracted by a week ago that you're starting to notice is unnecessary fluff, I want to invite you to stay focused on that with me. Although typically, when a person walks down that narrow road, they walk it alone, completely alone. I don't know that it has to be that way. There has to be a willingness to walk it alone if other people are being distracted by the fluff. But I don't know that it has to be walked alone if there are a few people that are willing to stay focused together. And I really do feel that right now we have that opportunity, but we have to be very clear, very honest. By the way, I think Bob Ferguson has been a part of this refinement as well. I do know that not everyone involved in Awakening Together is going to do this. They're not even going to see the refinement. I know that. But I also really, really, really feel that there are people here who are seeing it, who are feeling it. And I just want to invite us to join together. We can create something here that's truly helpful, each of us together. Right? But first it has to happen within each one of us, that desire for the true straight and narrow. All right, and that's what I had to say. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much, Regina. I appreciate you saying that. I definitely did feel a shift after I listened to Bob, and there was a much stronger desire an energy that I felt welling into me. And I like the way you phrased it, to take the narrow path. I think the closest description I could describe what I felt sparked from listening to Bob. And then I bought the book, immediately read it, underlined, highlighted, you know, so the sermon was inspired by both him and Elie Ruzdar. I have had communications with Elie Ruzdar in the last week. I said, "Do you have time to speak with me?" And she said, possibly, I think it was 1 p.m. last Thursday. It was during the week, or it was Tuesday. And I was home from work, and I got on my Skype. I friended her on Skype. She accepted my request. She was going to get on the Skype line. She wasn't there at 1 p.m. So I thought, oh, okay, well, no Ellie. And then I left. I went to go do some errands. At 1:02, it turns out, when I got back from my errand at like an hour and a half later, at 1:02, Ellen had responded and was ready to chat with me. So I emailed her and I said, hey, can we reschedule? And she goes, I don't have a free appointment until mid-May. So I had my one chance. If I just would have waited an extra couple of minutes rather than rushing off, that was the only regret that I had, that I didn't just wait patiently and sit there just for a few more minutes in faith and trust that she'd be there. I would have been able to connect with her. So it's an interesting story. Okay, turning the mic over to you, Dances.
Hey guys, thank you all. Awesome sharing. The thing that stood out to me about, like, what you were sharing about the inner roommate, before I heard about Michael Singer, it was called the observer self, and I don't know where that came from. And I used to practice that on a regular basis, and I don't know when I quit. Started doing it again when I remember. I'm getting back into some discipline, and the thing that I'm really noticing, like today on Facebook, the memories feature that Facebook has, these patterns are showing up that my observer self is going, look, you know, you're the one that's beating yourself up. It's okay to be, it's good to be, or helpful, I should say, to be observing and to be honest with yourself. That's very helpful. The thing that I was doing was just being, like, brutally honest. And the thing about the cane, I was hitting my own self, but I was not, I was being brutal about it. Have been being very brutal about it and beating the crap out of myself, and that just is not the point. I'm really grateful for the reminder of the observer self. There's just this calm that comes with that. And one of the other things that came up was that with the observer self or inner roommate is that I got distracted reading the board, sorry. And I noticed this with the memories thing. 5 years ago, there were fires, and I had to evacuate twice within 1 week. And I was also struggling with, I didn't want to move from where I was, but there was the area had become very unsafe. There was a lot of violence and stuff, a lot of stuff going on. I didn't want to move, but it was just like, okay. I kept saying, all right, Holy Spirit, I need a clear and definite sign. If I'm supposed to move, I need to know where and I need to know how, and let me know, you know, is this what I need to do? And there were, I did get clear and definite signs, but I kept like, really, is that a clear and definite sign? And I think 2 fire evacuations within 1 week is, I mean, if that's not a burning bush, I don't know what is. At any rate, I didn't know how, I didn't know where, but I just let go of all the, all the ideas of whatever. And it was like free falling in a floating way off a cliff. And out of nowhere, people just showed up. I mean, people I hadn't seen in forever, including my niece that I hadn't talked to in a while. They called and they said, do you need help? And I'm like, yes, I have 2 cats and 8 dogs that I've got to get out of here. And we can't travel together. They can't travel together to get out of the fires. And people showed up. I didn't even have gas in my car. Remembering that and using it again now is remembering situations like that is very helpful for just freaking let go dances. Come on. Let go. It's kind of like when I was trying to learn how to ski. I never did get to learn how to ski, water ski. I mean, I never could get up on the skis. But if I held on to that rope, it was very uncomfortable. Water was going in all kinds of places that was uncomfortable. And they were yelling from the boat, let go, we'll come back around. And letting go, and then it's just calm. So thank you very much, and that's all I had to say about that. Y'all are awesome. I hope you're having a blast.
Thank you, Dances, so much. Appreciate your sharing. And thank you, Regina, you know, and Karen, and everyone in Gloria for sharing, even though we didn't hear you. And Jim, for your comments. Your Zen. Maxim, fall off the cushion 9 times, get back up on it 10 times. And I think that's the important point, is to just leave this with the thought that the practice is what's important. To respond to what Regina said, for whatever reason, I did feel a spark, a calling, an energetic movement toward greater discipline and narrow pathness, or however we're going to refer to it, after I heard Bob Ferguson and Ellie Riesdahr both, really. The combination of both of them sparked me. And I hear what Regina's saying about there's a danger of getting back off of that path, and I'm really glad that Regina wants to invite whoever feels that call into that space together. So I would like to be one of those people that is in that, because I'm feeling it, and I certainly to whatever degree other people are feeling it, I would love to invite everybody else in that too. So we'll see as things unfold and as these coming months progress, how we're practicing, you know, this discipline, this narrow path, this gold coin. For me, it's the image of holding a gold coin. Every day I'm being handed a gold coin. It's very precious. It's very sacred. It deserves my full attention, my energy, my focus, as, you know, as Regina was describing the consciousness of her friend Norma. Focus. It deserves my focus, not my idle, passive attention. So, with that in mind, I'm going to give up the mic. I think we're going to be wrapping up our service today. And Lynn will have a closing song for us. And send my light and love to everyone. Take care.
Here comes the sun.